The following is a paid program and does not necessarily reflect the views of WSIC.
Here we go.
All systems are a go.
Ladies and gentlemen, hold on to your seats. Taking Care of Iredell with North Carolina State Representative Jeff McNeely is about to begin. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning, Iredell County. Hope everybody's doing well out there this morning. It's a beautiful day. We've had some great weather. Well, I say that. I was down at the coast of South Carolina, and it was great down there. I think it maybe did rain here a little. But it's still not bad. Still not bad out there. You can get some work done today. Going to have a really good show today. Got Hal Weatherman coming on. Hal coming first in the primary for the lieutenant governor's race on the Republican side. So we're going to have him call in the second part of the show around 11:30-ish and talk to us about going back out there. They're having a runoff for lieutenant governor and for auditor in a few congressional districts, but all we'll see will be lieutenant governor and auditor here in Iredell County. So that's coming up. I think it's May the 14th, if I got my date right. So just know that's going to happen. We're going to talk with him second part of the show. Real quick, just to get some housekeeping out of the way, I think Brian said something, but I want to say something too. The Iredell County Republican Convention is coming up this Saturday at 8 a.m. at the old courthouse upstairs there in the commissioner's room. Please come out, register. This is a good chance to get to meet other fellow conservatives. And also, we're going to carry on some business and have our different precincts and different chair positions as far as in the precincts go. Stuff like that. So it's important if you want to get involved, this is your chance to get involved in the Iredell County politics, especially if you're a conservative. So look forward to that. That's this Saturday, 8 o'clock. All right. And if anybody would like to call in, our number is 844-788-3464. That's 844-788-3464. I know it's a little different. But hey, y'all just keep up with that. 844-788-3464. Love to hear from you this morning. Well, let me just go ahead and get right to it. I know I sound like Joe Berg here, but hey, it's sports time in a way because we got March Madness. And how about that Wolfpack? All right, my boys, I went to state, graduated there a long time ago, 1986. Matter of fact, 1987, right after the year I graduated, that spring, was the last time they had a ACC basketball championship until Saturday night. 5 wins, 5 days. Beat Duke, Virginia, UNC. It was awesome. Now they advance to the NCAA tournament. 37 years. And so, like I said, it's been a struggle. But hey, it was a wonderful time to watch them play hard. They did a great job. They answered every rally that UNC threw at them. Watched the game with a lot of state guys and Carolina guys down there both. Like I said, I thought it was well played on both sides, and state just seemed to come out, wanted it a little harder, and they needed it a little more. Now they're in the tournament. And so somebody said, well, they got the worst record in the tournament. You know what? That's okay. They're in the tournament, and that's what counts. So, like I said, if anybody wants to call in, we'll talk a little sports, even if it's about that, but mainly we're going to talk about politics. So we'll go ahead and get on into our show. So it's been a couple weeks. Got busy last week with a lot of calls, which is great. So was Biden's State of the Union address the other week about everything but a union? I mean, looking at what he brought about and how he talked and whatever, I don't really see where he tried to bring anybody together. Did not even try to reach across the aisle. So he went out and gave a stick it to you speech. It was more of a stump speech or a campaign speech, in my opinion, instead of trying to show how we're trying to come back together as a country. He did show some energy, if you talk about talking loud energy, but he still made some weird comparisons, Russian and Putin and Trump in America. So I guess he considers Trump to be exactly like Putin. Also, he got to talking about the young lady who was killed, unfortunately, a nursing student, Lakin Riley, in Georgia by illegal immigrant from Venezuela. Instead, he mentioned Lincoln Riley. Once again, we're back on sports. Who was the he's the football coach at the University of Southern California. So I think we need to figure those two out because I think there's a whole lot of difference. Although Lincoln didn't have a great season, he wasn't really attacked by an illegal immigrant. So, you know, those are things. You know, just in case you're out there listening, Joe, bullying people and shouting at them doesn't work if you want them to give funding to Ukraine. You know, the sad part is everybody was watching the State of the Union speech, in my opinion, to see if he messed up. And that's almost like going to a NASCAR race and hoping for the wrecks, you know. Maybe it's exciting, maybe it's fun, but we set the bar pretty low on State of the Union addresses when we want to see if he can actually even pull it off and he's coherent. That's what we're looking for. I think we're at a sad state of affairs, just saying. So, you know, looked at that, watched that some, and just kind of shook my head. You know, he read the teleprompter fine. Is he up for this election? I don't know. That'll be up for the people to decide. We got two octogenarians, which means they're 80 plus going out of here, or will be. I'm just having a really hard time trying to get through this coming election that we have and a president. You know, it's kind of ironic. The HER report, the one where they were going to maybe go after Joe Biden for misuse, and same thing Donald Trump did, misuse of concealed private documents that weren't supposed to be seen by others, classified. And funny, that report came out, and guess who leaked that report? I don't want to say leaked it, allowed it to happen to put Joe Biden in such a bad light. It was Garland Merrick, his own attorney general, who has pretty much weaponized the Department of Justice and the FBI to do whatever dirty work he needs done, was the one that allowed that report to come out because he could have snuffed that report. He could have kept it in and didn't have to, but he didn't. And so, struggling with all that to a point, surprised that that happened. Or is there a greater plan? Maybe not greater. Maybe it's just a different plan. We'll see. They have a convention coming up this summer, just like the Republicans do. And who their nominee yet, in my opinion, is still out there. I don't think we've seen them yet. I could be wrong on that, but I doubt it. You hear a lot of rumors. You hear a lot of different talks. You know, I truly believe that somebody else is kind of running this country anyway, and he was the president there before Donald Trump was. That's just my opinion. And Joe just happens to be the face on the crowd. I did notice that Gen Z, unfortunately, is not real thrilled. They actually have both Biden and Trump's rating approval in the mid-20s. So this 18 to 28 or 9-year-old, I think it is, they're not real tickled with the way our politics in our country are going right now. And they usually are more on the progressive liberal side at that age. So we'll see just exactly what's going on, see how they're going to vote, or even if they're going to vote. I sometimes wonder if they're going to participate. So getting ready to go on to the right before the next part of the segment of the show here in a second. This is going to be a very interesting election, in my opinion, and it's going to tell us a whole lot about how the voters in this country feel. So hang with me. We'll be right back. Got more to talk about. If you want to call in, please do. All right. Till then, got to pay the bills, take the break. Hang tight.
Keep it right here. Taking Care of Iredell with NC Representative Jeff McNeely will return after this short break on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. Now more Taking Care of Iredell with North Carolina Representative Jeff McNeely on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
All right, back here for the, first part of the middle of the show, something like that. I don't know if you divided up in four, so we'll say we're back here. We're not quite halfway there. So we do have Hal Weatherman coming on after the break, so we got a little bit of time here. If anybody would like to call in, we'd love to hear from you. 844-788-3464. A whole lot going on right now. One thing that I did think was kind of noteworthy here that we ought to bring up. Michael Whatley, who has been the chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party, the NCGOP, for I think the last close to 8 years now, at least 7 years, got appointed to be the national chair of the Republican National Committee by Donald Trump, and also put in Laura Trump, his daughter-in-law. They're kind of co-chairing it together, but I think Michael's doing more of the fundamental stuff as far as the fundraising. I think she's more into making sure the grassroots efforts are got done. And anyway, so done a great job. Whatley has raised a lot of money for the state of North Carolina. We've been very successful in our last couple election cycles. Actually, I guess you count every 2 years, about the last four, almost five. So done a great job with us there, and we're going to miss him. Jason Simmons, I know, is one of the names that are out there right now trying to become the next NCGOP chair. So we'll see how that goes for Jason. And one thing you got to understand, too, when they took over here just this past week or so, they let go over 60 staffers at the national level. Now, some of that was duplicity. The Trump campaign and the national Republican Party committee, there was some duplicity there. A lot of people doing the same thing. So what this allows us to do basically is streamline. And so I think what they're going to do, they're going to open up the positions, let them reapply if they'd like to, and see what we got here. So I think this is a good time right now. You're seeing a lot of the changing of the guard in the committee. And so we'll see how it goes. It's going to be interesting to see where we get with this. Think Michael Whatley's going to do a great job for us. And so we're going to find out just how this works out and how he does. Looks like we may have a caller here. Joe, you want to bring one in, see who we got? Hey, this is Jeff McNeely. Who we got here?
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jesse, what's happening?
I didn't hear that beat.
It's a little different this morning. Yeah. But that's all right. We're working through this new studio thing. You know, it's hard to teach old dog new tricks.
Yeah, if I heard you on another show, you said that your district was Troutman, right?
It is. I actually drift down. I kind of have like half a Troutman and drift all the way down into Triplett, down about where 801 is.
Well, see, I'm out like just west of South Iredale High School, just a little bit right there at the store.
Yeah.
Where I live. And they said that was District 10. And you wasn't on my ballot.
Well, now, District 10 is the congressional. I'm District 84. I thought if you lived up there at your shop. Yeah, if you lived up at your shop, I would be on your ballot. But right where you're at there, if you're over near the school on like Old Mountain Road or East Mambo or Elm, that's Mitchell Setzer's. You know, we got too big from the census in 2020, and he ended up getting Fallstown and Shiloh B from me to equal us out. Because we represent about 88,000, and we had about 181 or 82,000 in the county. So I had to give up a little bit to him. So, but you know what? You call me, brother.
What's that?
I said, you need something, you call me. I told Mitchell Setzer I'd take care of all the work over here. He just had to look pretty.
Right. man, I witnessed something a couple weeks ago that really struck me, and it reminded me of the parable in the Bible of the fruit trees being hewn down.
Mm.
And I literally watched a warehouse getting emptied out and getting recycled, I guess you'd call it, but it was full of automation equipment that had been sitting for over a generation, I'm going to say, of a well-known fabric company here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally millions of dollars worth of equipment just getting thrown in a dumpster, and it was sad. It was a sad situation.
I see that a lot.
We need some kind of recovery set up here to evaluate, because when people go in, they see this stuff, they don't know what it is, they see a bunch of junk.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is stuff that could have been repurposed real easy for for a lot of different things. And Jeff, it was getting tossed in a dump because nobody knew what it was. I knew what it was, but it was like I couldn't stop them. I tried to get a hold of whoever it was that had them guys working and doing that, and I couldn't get a hold of them. And it was just sad. It was literally millions of dollars worth of equipment. I know there ain't nothing we can do about it, but it's sad that we need a place. And I heard something about them say that old Bernhardt building up there was wanting to do something with it. And it was late in the day that they was having some meeting or something that night up in town. And, man, that would be awesome to have. We need a place to go through stuff like that and salvage and, like, re-engineer and repurpose things, you know what I'm saying, to help re-engineer some of our manufacturing going on, because we don't have no manufacturing that's getting built from the ground up. As far as a lot of people's got great ideas out here, but they ain't got the money to go buy this kind of equipment. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I do.
Where if we could salvage, where engineers could come in and maybe dedicate some time to read. Just all kinds of just great things out there that's getting destroyed. It's like I can't help but to think of the parable in the Bible about the fruit trees being hewn down. You know.
Yeah. Well, he may kill me for this, but I've gone to Gordon's Recycling with stuff and saw stuff in their possession. We'll say not.
I wouldn't mention no names, but.
And I bought stuff back I've bought stuff from Richard. I've took stuff, and while I was there, I've bought stuff that was already there.
This is what's sad, Jeff, is I know somebody that was setting up one of these machines two blocks over 5 years ago, and I called him. He said, yeah, he's still trying to get it going, and everything that man needed went to Gordon's. And it was sad, but that was just because
if you can beat it down there before they start to crush it, they don't really like to do it, but they will sell you some. They will sell you some stuff.
Right.
Now, it won't be 10 cents on the pound. You'll pay more for it.
Oh,
but
I
hey,
know. Yeah.
It may be worth it. I mean, you know, I always said I'm kind of a junk man at heart. My dad was too. We just happened to be in the feed business. We bought a lot of used stuff and reworked it.
That's the problem. Is that kind of thinking? It's not junk. It's far from being junk.
I know.
It just depends on, you know, somebody don't know what they're seeing. They see junk. But somebody with the right eyes can see, knows what it's worth and stuff like that. And I just hate that it sat in that warehouse, the Carolina Mills,
mm-hmm.
for what, generations, what, two generations, that place has been closed down.
Oh,
nobody
yeah.
knows what that stuff is in there. And it had to be their maintenance center, but it was literally one of those great big knitting things that and all the components and all the automation that went on that thing. And it was sad. I mean, brand new stuff still in the box,
oh, yeah.
in the bag. It was crazy, man. But did you know anything about the Bernhardt building? Did they ever find a use for that?
No, I don't know much about it. I know what you're talking about. I just don't know what they're doing with it. I don't know who owns it.
They're wanting ideas from people, and I don't know who to go to talk about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure who owns that, but if I wasn't in the feed business, I probably would be in the salvage business or something, because I can't stand to see good stuff thrown away either. It drives me crazy. I think my daddy would do that to me.
The difference between a tool and die maker and a farmer.
Yeah. I mean, we never throw anything away on the farm. We've never thrown anything away.
That's why they're finding all this stuff, because people knew that. That's why you don't hoon down fruit trees.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know.
Dave, have a good one.
All right. See you, man. Take care. Hey, real quick, we got about 2 minutes to go before we go to the break. Don't know if we can take another call or not here. It might be so we can just get into this real quick. Also, something that's gone on. So the Biden administration has produced a budget proposal. And, folks, after reading it, the best I can tell, they are out to get small business owners with a proposed basically 20% increase in their tax categories that they were either exempt or normally held low. So all that talk about, oh, we're not going to go after anybody under, first they started out, was it, went at 750,000, then went to 600,000, then it went to 400,000. Well, now, I mean, what they're talking about doing here, this is going to be anybody making about anything small business-wise. Especially they're trying to double the capital gains tax. And where this comes into play is when Ma and Pa, just like Jesse was talking about, a time to sell their stuff. You know, the kids don't want to take over a business or whatever, and they may sell the whole thing or they may sell it off in pieces. They're going to double tax capital gains. They're going to go from 23 to 46%. So, and that's, of course, that's after the first million. But I'm going to tell you, with inflation and where everything's going, if they got any kind of land at all, you sell a business, it's going to bring probably at least a couple million dollars, and they're going to get 46% with this proposal. So, you know, once again, and they say this is to save Medicare, but they're only going to raise about $1.5 trillion over the decade, and Medicaid is bleeding at $1 trillion a year. So I don't see how this is going to save Medicaid, but I can darn sure tell you it's going to kill small business, and small business owners that have worked their whole life, they're going to end up giving back everything they got. So, all right, folks, we'll get ready. We're going to get our caller call in here, we hope, pretty soon, and have Hal Weatherman on, and can't wait to talk to him. So stay with us. Got to pay some bills with some commercials. We'll be right back, so hang tight.
Stay with us. We'll have more Taking Care of Iredell with NC Representative Jeff McNeely after these messages on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. It's Taking Care of Iredell with NC Representative Jeff McNeely on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Local starts here.
All right, back here with the second half of the show. We got our guest on the line. Joe, let's see if we can bring him in. Hey, Hal Weatherman, are you there, sir?
I am.
Hey, good to talk to you this morning. How you doing?
So far, so good, but the day is young.
That's right. That's right. Well, it's a Monday, so, you know, you can't expect a whole lot out of it. Just hope to get through it till you get to Tuesday. So, anyway. Yeah. Hey, Hal, we've had you on the show before. Hey, congratulations on winning the primary. Thanks. Unfortunately, you ain't crossed the finish line yet, dadgummit. It seems like you have, and they're wanting to do a redo. So, but congratulations on the first run being the lead vote getter. So, good for there.
Thank you. Yeah, I was very pleased with the election. I mean, we had an 11-man field, so it was going to be near impossible for any of us to clock the 30% threshold that you need to avoid a runoff. But, we got 181,000 votes statewide. Against the 11-man field, we won 63 of the 100 counties.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I was very happy with it. And, we set out from the very beginning to run a grassroots insurgent campaign. I went to all 100 counties. I was the only candidate to do that. And we went to 35 counties five times or more, 10 counties 10 times or more. So we put in the legwork necessary. It's really a testament to the power of grassroots. We did not run one TV commercial, one radio commercial, or do one piece of direct mail, and we still bested an 11-man field, which shows the power of the grassroots. And, you know, I certainly understand the second-place finisher calling for a runoff. That's his right. You know, in North Carolina, the runoffs aren't automatic like in other states.
Right.
The second-place person has a choice of whether or not they do that. We had kind of hoped maybe that he wouldn't. If you actually match me up versus him on election night, we actually beat him in 80 counties. And so we're well positioned going into the runoff. We're not going to leave anything to chance. The runoff, by the way, is May 14th.
Right.
I want your listeners to know that. And if they supported Hal Weatherman the first time around, I need them to come back out to help me preserve the victory. And, but we're encouraged and, I'm already back on the road. Like we never stopped. We went the next day, and I've already, like this weekend, I was on the road all weekend covering the county convention circuit, and we're just going to not let our foot off the gas until May 14th.
Well, and you can't. Hey, tell us a little bit about who Hal Weatherman is. Tell us family. Tell us some of the work experience, because I think that was critical in your campaign. You've been there, done that, as they say. So tell us a little bit about Hal Weatherman for those that haven't, they don't know you, even though they may have voted for you.
Sure. You know, I'm 54 years old. I've been married for 20 years to my wife, Shelley. We live in Wake Forest, North Carolina, right outside of Raleigh. I have three kids, all three teenagers. My oldest son is in college. And want to give a shout out to him, by the way, as a side note.
All right.
He broke the 3K school record for his college Saturday.
Not impressive. All right. Good job.
So that's pretty cool. He's a freshman. And then my other two kids are teenagers, still in the home. And my previous experience, prior to this, some people will know I was chief of staff to the previous Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest.
Yeah.
Was with him his whole duration and traveled the state with him, which I thought was an amazing preparation for what I'm doing now.
It was. I'm sure it was.
Yeah. I tell people there'll be no on-the-job training for me because I've literally been there. And I think that was a differentiator in my race. And then prior to that, I worked 18 years for Dan Forrest's mother. She has a different last name, but it's Sue Myrick. She's retired now. But she was the first female mayor of the city of Charlotte and then served 18 years with distinction as one of the most conservative members of Congress. And I was with her the whole time. And so, in a nutshell, that's my background. I'm a limited government, constitutional Christian conservative. That's how I would describe myself in a nutshell. And I'm looking forward, to hopefully winning this race, Lord willing, and the people willing to win this race so I can be there to serve the people that elect me, but also to serve Mark Robinson, who I believe will be the next governor of this great state, and I'd like to be there to help him.
Well, I think we'd really love for you to be there to help him also. We want to make sure both of y'all get across the finish line for sure. And just throw this out there,
we complement each other very well, so I'd like to be there to assist.
That's right. And the Iredell County Republican Men's Club here a couple Saturdays ago voted to endorse you for Lieutenant Governor, and so we're proud of that. We're proud to give you that endorsement, and I hope you're proud to receive it.
I was very proud to receive it. In fact, starting today, we're starting to unveil our endorsements. I know they released it. We haven't released it yet, but we will soon release that one on our end. I was very proud to get it. In fact, that was the first endorsement that I got in the runoff, which I'm very proud of. So I don't know that they know that, or y'all know that. But
I didn't know it anyway. Didn't know that.
Yeah. And so happy to get that. We've had a lot of support come our way just recently. The Troopers Association for the Highway Patrol endorsed me this weekend as well, which I'm very thrilled about and honored to have it.
That is a good
one. We'll start unveiling some other ones every day. I think Sheriff Eddie Cathy from Union County endorsed me this weekend as well. We released that today. So, I don't really play the endorsement game. I really didn't in the primary. I think I released five endorsements, and then we didn't really go solicit a whole lot because I really believe strongly that the only endorsement that matters is in the form of a ballot that the people cast. And so, but in a runoff, I actually do want to do more endorsements. And so was very happy to get the Iredell Men. That was awesome.
And I think you've had a couple of your fellow candidates have also endorsed you also, haven't they, that ran for Lieutenant Governor with you this time?
As of right now, Seth Woodall, who was one of my competitors, he endorsed me.
Yeah,
he endorsed me the very next day, I believe it was.
Yes, and Seth, I think Seth was number four, maybe something like that.
I think it was four. Yeah, I think it was four. He ran a very solid campaign for a first-time candidate. And he did it unsolicited, which I loved. And as soon as I got it, he posted on Facebook. I called him and actually went and visited with him. Drove up to Rockingham County and visited with them the end of last week, and we just had a really good visit. The thing about all the guys and ladies that ran, there were 11 of us again, we all ran very clean campaigns. And I was very proud of us as a field for not running a divisive, bitter, mudslinging campaign. It just didn't happen in a race. I consider a good many of the candidates friends. And so I was very proud of the campaign that we collectively ran because it gave voters, a choice. And everybody talked about what they believed. And I thought that was great, instead of trying to rip to shreds the next guy.
Well, and that's a rarity nowadays. It really is, even all the way down to the dog catcher race. It seems like there's always somebody out there trying to, you know, put somebody in a bad light or do whatever. And I always say, stay above the fray, run your campaign, talk about yourself, what you are, what you're going to do, what you have done. Talk about that. Don't beat
that's
the other
what
person
I believe.
Down.
Yeah, I believe, and I've always conducted myself that way over the years in politics, and you know, I tell people I have to give an account one day.
Oh,
you know, one day when I die, I'll have to give an account, and I just don't think God put me on this earth to smear another person. I just don't think that's what He did, and I think people are hungry for leadership, and you know, they're hungry for authenticity and genuineness, and people that come to them. And expect nothing, but come to meet with them. And, you know, that's the entire, you know, genesis of our campaign. The whole backbone of our campaign was premised on the concept that we will take the race to all 100 counties, we'll stretch the race to all 100 counties, and we'll repeatedly go back to them and show them that, you know, this is the intensity that I'll bring to the general election if you trust me with the Republican nomination. You know, I tell people I'm interviewing for the job. One county at a time, because I'm aware if I win, you don't work for me. I work for you. So I'm interviewing to my potential bosses, the people, by going to each county and giving them a chance to come out and talk to me, unfiltered, ask me questions. I take Q&A every night, wherever I speak.
That's a brave man. Brave man.
Well, I just
but that's what you do. You know, that's what you do.
Well, I mean, I believe the Bible to be true, and the Bible says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And I actually believe that's what the primary process is for the party. You could take that same philosophy and apply it to that you have to put yourself out there and let man come after you, good or bad, and sharpen you and prepare you for what it's going to take to go to the ultimate battle this fall. And so, you know, I consider it joy to travel the state. It can be a grind. It's a massive state. We've been, like I said, on the road continuously for 5, sometimes 6 days a week for 14 straight months. And we've got an extension of that now for 2 more months. And but I consider it joy. Like I think the greatest asset of our state are our people. And I can't think of a better opportunity. I mean, what an amazing win, lose, or draw. What amazing journey this is to spend every day talking to people from the janitor up to the CEO and everywhere in between. And people open up to you. They'll tell you. They know what you're up to. They know that you're seeking the office, and so they want to tell you things. And I'm fascinated by it. I love to hear people's stories. I just love the interaction on the campaign trail. I really do. And I love this great state.
Well, and you know, I just said earlier in the show about how, well, the Generation Z, I guess it is now, the 18 to about 27, 8 year old, somewhere in there. You know, only 25% of them seem to even be engaged enough to not like either presidential candidate we got. So how do we touch these people? We only got about 40 seconds too, unfortunately, we've got to take a hard break. But I mean, how do we get these kids? And I'm thinking what you did and how you're going about it. Hopefully maybe they're coming out. Maybe this is how we need to do it, because they need to meet people. They need to understand.
They need to meet people.
Social media doesn't tell you the story.
No, I mean, social media is important to get in front of them, yes, but I do think you have to go to them. If we're waiting as a party, you know, from a Republican Party standpoint, for these young people to gravitate, find their way to the Republican Men's Club or to the Republican Women's Club, they're just not going to do that. And that's not unique to the Republican Party. All institutions across our society are breaking down.
Hey, Hal.
We are. Yeah.
Hold that thought, because we got to go to break. Folks, stay tuned.
Sure thing.
All right. Yeah.
More Taking Care of Iredell with North Carolina Representative Jeff McNeely is coming up on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Call now to speak with NC Representative Jeff McNeely at 844-STUDIO-4. It's Taking Care of Iredell on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
All right, back here, second part of the show, or last part of the show here. We got Hal Weatherman, who's running for lieutenant governor, on the line. Let's see if we can bring Hal back in. Hal, you with us still?
I sure am.
Sorry about that. We got to pay bills around here, unfortunately, so we're doing the best we can. We got to take those dadgum commercial breaks. But anyway, hey, we were talking about the young people and getting them engaged, and I had to cut you off, and I hate that. But, you know, I think I think it's going to mean grassroots trying to get to where they are. I don't know how we get them where we are, but trying to get to where they are and get the message through. I think they get bombarded by social media so much and believe whatever. Yeah. Sadly, we got to actually talk to these kids, these young people. I know that's not easy.
It's not. And again, you have to go to them. You have to keep going back to them. And yes, use social media. But all of our institutions. Traditional institutions are kind of dying, they're aging out, the Rotary Clubs, the Kiwanis, the Lions, even some of the, the veterans organizations and whatnot. And it's kind of a sad commentary on our society. Yet at the same time, social media is exploding. So we are both as connected as we have ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we have no personal connection with people. We have no personal connection, meaning face to face. And this is why, you talk about Generation Z, Generation Alpha. They've already started polling these young people. And it's interesting, the most pro-life young generations that we have seen come into our society in multiple generations now. Yet they love life. They're intrinsically tied into life, and they value the sovereignty and the sanctity of life. But they are also the most stressed out, anxious, suicide-prone generations we've ever seen, which means they're coming into society intuitively loving life, but they're encountering us, right, the older generations, and they are quickly losing hope immediately. So, one of the things, the ways I think that you bridge that gap is to start reestablishing the personal relationships and reaching out to them. We used to call it mentorship. That you would mentor these young people. And we need to go back to that. We need to go back to breathing life into them. So I try every chance I can, and I've done this not just in this race, but as, I'm 54, so I'm old enough to be all these guys' fathers. I try to breathe life into it. If they have questions, if they want to shadow me for a day, if they want to help on the campaign or whatever, I try to give them that opportunity. So I can relate to them personally. And I just think that's what we're going to have to do, make personal investments in people again. It's a hard thing to do. I get it.
Well, I'm going to totally agree with you. It's almost scary. Everything they read, I went and talked to a class, and there was some batter back and forth, slamming me during my primary on social media. And they asked me all these questions like they were the complete truth that what was stated. And I told them all, I said, that's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. And they looked at me like, right. Would somebody lie to me like that? I'm just saying. And that's the bad thing right. about not having the interaction with people. You don't see the body language. You don't understand how to right. read people and see if that is the truth or not the truth. You're just seeing what they're writing and unfortunately accepting it for the truth in it, and it's not there. And they got to understand that not all people out there have good intentions. I'm afraid they don't. So they've got to understand. And that's one of the things, like I said, they've got to interact with each other. We've got to interact with them. We can't keep each other at arm's length. There's no way. So,
exactly.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about the job requirements here and where you fit into that, which I think is important to help people understand why Hal Weatherman is the best candidate for the job. So let's talk a little bit about that. Now, there's a couple different boards that you'll serve on that are extremely important. You're going to serve on the State Education Board. You're going to serve on the State Community College Board. Give us a little bit of background on those as far as how you fit in there.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing you have to think about when you elect a lieutenant governor is the obvious, is that you are technically electing a governor in waiting. And I don't mean that from an ambition standpoint. I mean, five times in our state history, the governor has either died in office, been removed or otherwise incapacitated. We have an automatic succession plan in North Carolina. So when you elect a lieutenant governor, you have to ask yourself, does this person have the experience and the knowledge and the skill set necessary to actually run the state? God forbid if something like that happens. So that's number one, right? Can this person pardons and commute sentences? Can they have almost unilateral control of the state assets and real estate, because the governor basically does with some checks and balances. Can he or she be the commander in chief of the Guard, both the Air National Guard and the Ground Guard, because we have a dual system of command here. And, you know, unless they're federalized, they're under the commander in chief of the governorship.
That's right.
And so you have to ask yourself these things, number one. Number two is you're 100% correct. You know, Lieutenant Governor, either by general statute or by state constitution, serves on the State Board of Education, also on the State Board of Community Colleges, State Board of Economic Development, some lesser boards, also serves as president of the Energy Policy Council, helping to vet through energy policy before it goes to the General Assembly for a vote. So, you know, these are very powerful. I'm very excited about the two education-related boards. I want to be a voting member on both of those boards. I'm very concerned with the woke agenda, DEI, SEL, CRT, all these three-letter acronyms that are really just the DNA of the woke agenda, broken into their component parts, tied to federal funds, and then passed through our system. And it's like cancer. Once it comes into your system, your school system, it metastasizes and it grows. And so I want to fight these things because I think these are ideologies that have Marxist origins, and they absolutely are trying to divide us as a people. So on the K-12 board, I'm looking forward to fighting that. And then also just protecting our people. You know, I want SROs, armed security guards in every school in this state. I want to protect our greatest asset, the children. And so, you know, I want to stand in the gap on the case on the K-12 system. And then on the community college system, I've preached this message all over the state. I personally have a burning desire to remove the stigma that our society has unfortunately put on men and women who work with their hands. I want to drive people into the trades. You know, the quickest way to make six figures in this economy, the quickest way to build a business that you can sell 10 years and retire is to go into the trades, to go into HVAC, commercial welding, electrician, plumbing, whatever it is. I want to drive people into the trades. And, you know, I want to push for what I call the 2-and-2 degree. I want to create a special degree, a partnership between the community college and the 4-year university, where kids who are going to go to college go the first 2 years to a trade school, not just to get their general credit, but to get a certification in a trade, then transfer over to the 4-year university system, complete their studies, get a degree in graphic design, marketing, budget, finance, business, whatever it is. So they have all the tools that they need to be a business owner and an entrepreneur, and then couple it with a skill set that's going to make them profitable and self-sufficient the rest of their life. And I want to remove that stigma, and I can do that from that board position. So I'm very excited about both of those board positions. And then over and above that, I want to make myself available to serve the governor of this great state as well, as a force multiplier for his agenda and whatever it is that, where I could be of service to him as well.
And you know, not only that, but you'll be in charge basically of leading the session for the Senate the days that you can be there. So and you do have a vote
there.
You're
the president of the Senate. You're the presiding officer of the Senate. You're not the agenda setting officer.
No.
You're the presiding officer. So yes, you gavel in, you gavel out, you preside over the session, and I take that role serious, and I will do that as well.
Yeah. And have a vote in case of a tie. So you're participating there in legislation. So there is the good part. There is the good part.
Sure.
You know, we're getting down here. We got about 3 minutes left to go. Won't talk about your opponent now. Just very for a minute, maybe say a little bit. Rachel Hunt won on the Democrat side. This is Jim Hunt, four-time governor, I think, of North Carolina. Rachel, hadn't heard much out of her really since she's been in the legislature. She served with me in the House, and she also went to the Senate now. Not carrying a lot of umph with her. How do you feel about going into the fall saying you win this thing? I think you match up very well to go against her.
Well, I did. I believe so as well. And first, I'll just simply say I am myopically focused on my runoff right now.
Okay? I know.
You know, I'm going to focus my time, my energy on that because there's no tomorrow, right? I've got to get through that gate. But assuming we get through that, which we aim to, and aim to decisively, I'm actually looking forward to the compare and contrast between myself and my Democrat opponent, who's already been selected by her party, Rachel Hunt. She's going to have to defend the world we live in today. It's her party on the national level that is creating unbelievable chaos in this country, from the collapse of our southern border And think about this, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of OTMs other than Mexicans coming across the southern border, and they are making their way across the country. And we are naive to assume that the next governor of this great state, lieutenant governor, will not have to deal with homegrown terrorism. It's not homegrown at all. We allowed it to walk across the southern border. She's going to have to defend things like this. She's going to have to defend things like the rapid, you know, the inflation that we have, and people can't afford their groceries or their gas. And, you know, I'm talking about common sense things. I'm talking about, you know, the trades and driving young people into jobs that'll be good paying jobs, and fighting, you know, things like CRT, which, you know, absolutely is an anathema. It's a complete opposite of what most Americans believe. And she's going to have to own those things. But right now I'm focused on the runoff, but I'm looking forward to the compare and contrast. Plus, my style of campaigning is labor intensive. I'm going to be on the road.
Hey, Hal,
I'm not going to run this campaign from Raleigh.
All right. Well, hey, that's a great stunt speech. Let me go ahead and cut you off right there. We're going to do a quick prayer. Yeah. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray for Hal and his family. I pray for all out there that are in these runoffs. I pray for you to watch over us. Be with us, lead and guide us. In Jesus Christ's name, amen. Hal, appreciate it. Folks, take care.
Amen.
Until next week. We'll see you.
You've been listening to North Carolina Representative Jeff McNeely. Join Jeff again next Monday morning at 11:05 for Taking Care of Iredell on News Talk WSIC.
Serving you better than ever before. 105.9 100.7 WSIC, Statesville, Morrisville, North Charlotte.